So I usually have a domain name if I'm wanting to sell a product. I want an actual domain name for it so that it's always sitting there. And I try to get something as short as possible, like, you know, get this training now, you know, .com or whatever.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. And today's special guest is going to be talking to us about turning content into cash. And for this, I've gone and found an expert in this topic, and his name is Tim Connolly from foolishadventure.com. And it's a great podcast show. I've been listening to it, and I was also a guest on that show recently. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hey, what's up, James?
Well, I'm still traveling at the moment, Tim, and we're recording from Paris today. And I imagine you're probably in Phoenix?
Yes, just on the north side of Phoenix, a little out in the desert.
Are you sitting in your cupboard today?
Yes, I am. I am in my studio that I've converted from my walk-in closet. So,
you know, I think this could be a potential topic for us, because I know that when people think about the idea of turning content into cash, they probably have visions of a high expense, professional studio equipment, and certain things that would be barriers for them to be able to do this. I want to ask you, is this something they should be concerned about?
No, I think that's a problem with a lot of people when they go into any kind of business. They focus on non-essentials and not on the things that will create a minimum viable business. So if you want to create a podcast, don't go out there and buy a mixer and buy all these things. Unless you are an audio engineer, don't do any of that nonsense.
So keep it nice and simple.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Tim, perhaps you could just give us a very brief background as to how this has become your topic of specialty, and that will give us the reference point we need, and then we can step into some of the steps that people can follow to make this happen for themselves.
Okay. So I got into doing this podcasting thing called The Foolish Adventure Show a couple of years ago now, and a lot of the questions that kept coming to me, and it was a lot of these bloggers who blog about blogging, and it was really pissing them off because they were giving business advice without ever knowing anything about how to run a business. And a lot of it was about not actually making any money. Don't worry about making money for 1 to 2 years with your blog. And it's like, that's not business. That may be a hobby, but that's not a business. And so it was bugging me that people were spending a couple of years of their lives wasting it on just creating loads and loads of content and never making a buck. And that's something that it just really bothered me. So I figured out that the best way would be to spin that around and turn that content into cash.
Right. So you're taking the business need first, where people would come in and say, Tim, I need to make a little bit of income online. How can I do this without having to set up a podcast and wait a year till I see something from it?
Right. And that comes down to having a business purpose for whatever it is you're doing. You're actually out there solving someone's problem. That's the fastest way to get to any kind of income, is to find a need and come in and serve that need. So you can do that either through a service business or through a physical product, and you can even do that with information. And a lot of people are getting into blogging or any kind of information business without ever actually finding out if there's a need for it, or that people would pay to have that solution delivered to them.
So it seems, from my perspective, that some people are doing it because it's perhaps their need to maybe express themselves or to develop an idea they have, but it starts from a selfish place rather than looking outside themselves and to the marketplace.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not business. It's your, you know, self-expression. It's your hobby. It's something that you should do if that's what you feel compelled to do, but don't complain that you're not making a dime.
That's it. So the topic is turning content into cash. Do you have some favorite methods for doing this?
Webinars. love webinars. I call it the expert panel. That's one of my favorites because it does a lot of different things. It connects you to other experts in your marketplace. So let me define it first before I go into like its full benefits. An expert panel is where you get together three or four, maybe as many as six or seven different experts in your marketplace. And you can interview them individually, or you can get them all onto a single webinar and have people get on there. They cover a topic and then people can ask them questions. It's a really simple format, easy to do. And then it gets you these benefits of being able to network with the top people in your marketplace. It gets you traffic because these top people in your marketplace are going to send traffic to your site, and it's also going to attract a lot of people in your marketplace because you're creating this event that they haven't seen before. So it's going to bring a lot of people to them. And then the third is that you become one of the top experts in your marketplace. So that's one of my favorite content into cash strategies, is to create an expert panel, because you can sell it before people come onto it, and you can sell it after they've been on the live webinar.
Awesome. So I want to develop this a bit because I'm sure there'll be some questions around this, and I see my job as asking the questions that people would want answers to, even though I might know the answer. So this is like a more powerful Oprah model, where you're not just interviewing one person, but you're interviewing multiple people, or in almost becoming one of those people when you facilitate this. Now, you mentioned that this is easy. I want to challenge that and just ask, I guess, some technical things. You know, how do you get people to the webinar? What platform are you using? How do you record it? I'd love us to go through some technical steps here so that someone might get a feel for what things would be on their checklist if they were going to implement this idea.
Okay. So you called me out on this easy thing. And this is something that happens to people who have been doing something for a while. You forget just how hard something really is when you're first starting out. So I'll apologize for that. It's like, you know, you go to the gym, you start working out, lifting 100 pounds was difficult when you first got there. Years later, it's easy. Okay. So I'll try to refrain from those easy comments. Setting this up, I like to use GoToWebinar. It's not perfect, but it is one of the best software solutions on the marketplace right now. So I like using GoToWebinar for doing my webinars, and they have a registration process. It's pretty ugly, but it does tend to convert fairly well when you send traffic to it. If you want to also build your list at the exact same time, I've been using this little plugin for WordPress called Webinar Bridge. It's also not a very good piece of software, but it does work. It will put, when anyone opts in to get onto your webinar, it will put their email address onto your autoresponder sequence. So it could be AWeber or Constant Contact or whatever you're using. It'll put them on there, and they'll be able to register for the webinar all at the same time. So that's the getting them on. And let's see, I think the technical side of it is not really the toughest part. The toughest part is actually getting the experts, and then getting the experts to actually promote for you.
Okay, so just a little side note there. If any of my listeners are using Nanocast, they can integrate GoToWebinar with their autoresponder with an affiliate program, which is a handy little tip for driving registrations to a webinar. And my tip there is set the affiliate commission to 1 cent per opt-in so that affiliates can track their conversions. So anyway, I just wanted to jump in with that. Now, let's go to the getting the experts. How do you convince somebody to get onto your webinar?
Okay, so there is a bit of psychology that comes into this. One is that people love to talk about themselves, And most experts are in a position where they want to continue to promote their business. And they are very willing to come into things that don't take up a lot of their time, but give them a huge impact, especially since you're going to be doing all the labor to run this webinar to get the marketing out into the marketplace. Since you're going to be doing all that work, and all they have to do is show up and be an expert, they tend to be more willing to do it. But the big thing is getting them to even pay attention to you in the first place. That's the hard part. And that's the question I get all the time when I say, hey, you should interview someone. And they said, oh, well, how do I get them to contact me? And it's not really that difficult. My first start now, years ago, it was you just had to get them on the phone or you had to email. I'm not going to go back how old I am and how far back you would have to use just phones. But going now to the point where I get on Twitter, and Twitter's this awesome communication tool that lets you reach out to just about anyone. And I can get on Twitter and say, hey, I'd love to be able to have you on my show. I'd love to be able to create this thing and just get started right there. Start opening up the relationship with a person before you hit them with, hey, I'd like to get you on this big thing, and I'm going to charge money for it. And it becomes this convoluted message. So the first thing is to just reach out and get in touch with them and find some kind of common ground to connect with them. And then you can start moving into how to get them onto this actual expert panel.
Yeah, and I've seen your style before, and it's really, really effective. It's just going for that low resistance thing. In fact, from memory, the reason that we ended up doing a podcast was because you'd commented on someone else's podcast with me that it wasn't long enough and that you'd like to get me on your show. And I simply replied and said, yeah, let's do that. So it was a really nice social media approach that is a low resistance, and it puts the idea out there. So obviously you're not afraid to ask for what you want.
Yeah, I think that's the big key, is that if you never ask, you're never going to get. So yeah, some of these experts are going to say no. That's going to happen. But you shouldn't be afraid to ask them, because the upside is so huge and the downside is what? A no. That's the downside.
And you may not even cry yourself to sleep if you get a no. Okay, so just keeping pace here, we've decided a good way to get this content and turn it into cash is to run a webinar. We know we can use a platform like GoToWebinar. We could even use a trial if we wanted to see how it works before we commit to that. We more than likely are not going to get a whole bunch of people on the first one if we're just working through this the first time. And we've managed to approach someone and convince them that they should be on the webinar. And we've probably set a date, put up a squeeze page, and started getting some registrations. Now, I guess this is where the fear might start kicking in. Have you got any tips to ease through the next stage? Is there some pre-preparation things, or what should you do before you actually get to that? The hand moves onto the clock when you're supposed to go live.
Oh my gosh! Practice first. Get some friends to get on to GoToWebinar. And practice recording, practice all sorts of the different functions on GoToWebinar. If you think you're going to do a poll, practice running a poll. Practice doing every bit of tech, because guess what? As soon as you're running a webinar, it's going to mess up. I don't think I've ever had a webinar go perfectly smooth ever. It just, I don't know why, but stuff just happens. You have a there's always some kind of technology issue. And if you're doing it for the very first time, you're going to panic and you're not going to get your recording done. So don't do that. Make sure you spend time and practice. Maybe you have to practice a few times and bug your friends a whole bunch and have them come on so you can practice doing your webinar. That's on the technical side. You practice those things so that you can make sure that you're going to get the kind of recording that you want, because to be able to sell this afterwards, you have to be able to record your webinar. And the nice thing is that GoToWebinar actually has a record feature. And if you're on Mac, it now, and just like a month or so ago, they put in the ability for Mac to record. So it's fantastic now. You just hit the record button and boom, now you have your webinar. But definitely you have to practice.
Now, do you also do a backup recording? Do you ever use other devices?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Because that's the other thing. The recording is going to fail.
It will, won't it?
So you have to have multiple computers recording. So what I'll do is I'll have another laptop running and it'll be recording. So it'll be recording with Camtasia or ScreenFlow, and then I'll be on my machine actually running the webinar. And then I'll even have a friend who's who I know is going to be on the webinar. I'm going to say, hey, can you record for me too?
That's it. And you know what? In the case where I've lost recordings before, in every single case, one of my attendees has got a screen version of it, which has been handy. But I have one of my team members log on and just record in as a backup. And then after my rendering is complete and I've uploaded my product, I say, okay, you can go and delete it now. So it is likely to happen. I'll give it another tip here. If you do lose the recording, then the best thing that you can do is as soon as possible is to facilitate another run through and just capture it while you possibly can. You know, it's harder with experts. You'll probably never get the same product. But if you happen to be the expert, or if you only have one expert, then, you know, there has been a time in the past where it was just me on the webinar, and for technical malfunction reasons, I just re-ran the webinar to myself and recorded it and uploaded the replay, because that ended up being the next best thing. But just accept that there will be technical challenges and prepare for that. And I love your tip about practicing. I remember the first webinar that I ever ran, it was the most unusual feeling sitting there talking to myself for an hour without having a lot of interaction. It was just, I could see people chatting. I felt like a radio DJ. That's just pushing all the buttons and you know, people asking questions and me asking them. I tried to do the mute, unmute thing, but that can be a challenge if it's your first time, and later on you'll get experienced. Do you use two screens when you run a webinar?
At first I didn't, and then it just became too much of a hassle. So if you actually want to interact during the webinar with your audience, then you need two computers, because you're not going to be able to handle it on one screen and be able to make sense of it, especially if you're doing something like Keynote or PowerPoint, because it's going to take up your whole screen. So you can't see the GoToWebinar control panel.
Exactly.
And so you'll need two screens to do that.
And if you use presenter mode with your PowerPoint or Keynote, you can see what's coming up. You can put your prompts in the presenter's notes on the spare screen, and you have your chat pad, and the audience will be able to see it. And I've had, because I have such a low internet speed, sometimes my screens jam up or don't go through fast. So I've found by having plain pictures or black and white, it's actually helped the webinar flow better. And by adjusting my resolution, if you use a huge monitor, it's good to drop it down a size or two so that it flows better. And your audience will tell you if your screen jams up or if they've stopped being able to hear you. It's important that you can keep an eye on those comments during your webinar.
Right, right. And a lot of times what I'm doing is I actually wait till the end to open up for questions so I can run through that. And then, but still, like you said, being able to see if there's a problem, and like we said before, there's going to be a problem.
Okay. So let's just get to the stage now. We've got our expert to agree. We've got our squeeze page up. We've got people turn up. We've practiced. We go live and we're running the webinar. And now we're interacting with our expert. We have a Q&A section and we've recorded it and everything's run smoothly. What happens next?
Okay, so a lot of it then comes down to the content. What kind of content are you actually delivering to your market? And whether or not this is a paid webinar or one that you're giving away for free and using it as a marketing strategy. So if it's a paid webinar, give them everything. Don't hold back. Give them as much as you possibly can so that they walk away and they feel like they have gone through a complete training program. You don't hold stuff for later. Just give them as much as you can, because what's going to happen is they're going to be so blown away by the amount of content that they've gotten. One, that they're not even able to absorb it all in the time frame, but they're going to be so blown away by it that they're going to want more from you. They're going to want you to do this again and again, and they're going to be clamoring for it. So if you hold back, then they're just going to be like, "Ah, it was all right," and then they're not going to want more content. In a free setup, what you need to do is, you're most likely doing it for marketing purposes to sell something else. So you're going to need to have call to actions set up inside this webinar to get people to actually buy something after the webinar. And
okay.
Yeah. So those are two different ways of using the exact same setup.
Now I'm going to ask you a few technical questions on the content here. Do you have a structure or a framework that you use to prepare your webinar sequence or slide deck?
I do it based upon whatever the content is, but I do set up a keynote presentation. Since I'm on a Mac, I set up a keynote presentation and I run through these are the different stages, and I know about how much time each of those stages is going to take. So you really do kind of need to break up the content into segments so that you can have decent segues between one topic to the next topic, and that it has a logical sequence, especially if you're trying to get people to take some sort of action at the end. You need to have them driven to that outcome.
Great. And so are there any sequences or stages that you use time and time again, or are they flexible each time?
They're fairly flexible, but you know, you always have your introduction and you have your end. And so at your end, you run through a summary, you know, there's the old speaker's training that says, you know, tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them what you're telling them, and then tell them what you just told them. Okay.
Right.
So if you follow that, so start in the beginning, tell them what you're going to tell them. Then you actually tell them during the webinar, and at the end, you tell them what you've just covered. And so if you follow that, it's very hard to go wrong.
Cool. Well, I'm going to give our listeners a little checklist as well that I use for my content. And this will work for a sales pitch or a free content, a paid content delivery. And I use a format that I learned from a speaker training, but it was why, which is why is this important to you? It's what is it? And then it's how it works. And then there's the what if, which is the cover off, or as we would know in sales, closing all the objections. And that's where you would put your call to action as well if you're going to sell something. But I will also give a huge tip here that has made me millions, is that even a paid delivery content should still have a call to action, and that should be to the next solution that is suitable for even your paid participant. So even if someone has paid for a product, then there's probably a product or service, hopefully you have or can affiliate with, that is the next appropriate step, even if it is staying in a recurring community or a coaching environment. In your case, you have a membership, don't you, Tim?
Yes. I have a membership site, and that's where I do a lot of my training. So I want to make sure that in those cases, it's when I'm telling people to go do something else in that training, it's to related training modules.
So exactly. Yeah. That increases retention for your membership.
So one of the things that I want to add to this is that you can have the ability to repurpose content. So a lot of people are already blogging and they're already creating loads and loads of content. So you can actually take some of that content and repurpose it into these webinars.
Great tip. So we've got our webinar, we've structured our content, we've run it, we've recorded it. And if it was a free one, then we've made an offer that people should look at. How do you handle that offer? Do you have a /go or do you email them the offer? At what part of the webinar do you put the link? Do you have a time limit?
Okay. So for people listening on the /go, you can use if you're using WordPress, there's a redirect plugin. So then you can just say, hey, go to this short URL. And then it's going to take you over to the longer URL where your offer page is sitting. So that's a little technical tip there. So I usually have a domain name if I'm wanting to sell a product. I want an actual domain name for it so that it's always sitting there. And I try to get something as short as possible, like, you know, get this training now, you know, .com or whatever.
Good tip. Yeah. And I guess you're doing that on the basis you might make more than $8 in commission.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good idea. Yeah. And where do you mention the call to action? Always only at the end or somewhere else?
Oh, I've taken to doing it at least 3 times. So some of the training that I'd heard in the past, ages ago, I think it was a guy named Jim Edwards, who was one of the first doing how to do webinar stuff years ago, back when it was really hard to run a webinar. And he would say, do a call to action in about the first 10, 15 minutes of the webinar. And then at the end, well, it depends on the length of it. So if you're doing something that's an hour of training and then maybe another half hour of Q&A, then about 20 minutes in, I do a call to action. And then before I go to the Q&A, I do a call to action. And then during the Q&A or at the end of the Q&A, do a call to action.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, let's talk about bundling this up. And you've mentioned earlier that you can do stuff with this webinar. You could sell it and put it somewhere else. What are some of the things we can do to turn this content into cash?
Okay. So first, selling access to just get on the call. If you want to be on it live, you can sell access to that. So that's point one. And then you have the ability to sell it afterwards, after the fact. So you go out to the list, the people who show that registered, and out of the people who register, maybe half are going to show up. Sometimes as little as 40%, and sometimes even less than that, will show up. Lots of people will sign up but never come. Well, they're your first people to go out to and say, hey, you didn't show up. And you missed this really great training. And so, but you can get it now in this download form for just X dollars. So that's your first pitch right after that webinar. And I wouldn't wait too long. I've seen a lot of people try to wait after their webinar, like 1, 2, 3 days. You can do it immediately after. You can send out, hey, get the webinar now, especially like the people who just attended. You can send them out an email immediately. And you'll probably have a higher conversion rate because it's all still fresh in their minds. So those are the first people you're going to hit. Then you're going to go out to your list and you're going to say, hey, we did this great webinar and there was this amazing training. So what you need to do is get into this program here. Just click the buy now button and get access to it for just X amount of dollars. And that's just on your side. That's just you. The other is, as you were saying, using an affiliate program, then you can have the experts actually promote to their list, and then that's going to get you more and more sales, and you're going to split that with your experts.
Fantastic. Okay, now a technical question here again. How do you replay that webinar?
Okay. So I usually don't do webinar replays. I like doing mine live. I like then selling them or packaging them into my membership site afterwards. But I do know a lot of people who do run webinar replays. And there are I don't know if you can even do it with GoToWebinar because I've never even tried. But I have seen that there are a few other software services out there that will do webinar replays. And like I said, so I can't really speak to it because I don't do it because I love doing mine live and I always change it up if I'm doing the same topic again. So I know you've done these before, right?
Well, there's a few points around this that I'm hoping we can cover. Now, firstly, when you email out and say, hey, you missed the webinar, buy it now. How are you representing that? I guess that was the intent of my question. Like, what's the technical process once you've recorded it to get it to streaming or downloadable? What's your process?
Oh, okay. Okay. So if I'm using GoToWebinar or even recording with ScreenFlow, I'm going to on my side, I'm going to end up with a .mov file. And so that's going to have my audio, it's going to have my video. I like to clean up my audio so that in the replay afterwards, they're able to get a really crisp sound. So I like to pull the audio out, run it through Adobe Audition, through a couple of filters, and then that gives it a nice rich sound. And I have a tendency to kind of whistle my S's. It's in audio terminology, it's called sibilance. And so when I run it through my filter, I sound like I have a radio voice. So it's kind of nice that way.
And yeah, if people could hear what you really sound like.
Oh, yeah, they'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't listen to this guy. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Okay, now you probably scared off the technophobes there, and I just want to assure
you don't have to do this, right?
It's simple.
Yes, you do not have to do it because you can take that raw file and maybe open it up in ScreenFlow or Camtasia or iMovie or Windows Movie Maker and cut off the messy beginning and your messy ending and maybe tack on an intro and an outro and now you have like this professional recording. You can do that. I'm just kind of a nerd and I get really anal about making sure that I have really nice sound and stuff like that. So you don't have to do what I do, but you can just use the recording in the raw if you want, because it's done for you by GoToWebinar.
But where do you load that to the internet for people to get?
Okay, I use Amazon S3. So I'll put it up on Amazon S3 because I get a better delivery than if I put it on my own server. I don't want to slow down my server. I don't want to take up a ton of storage on my server for something like this. So I'll put it on Amazon S3. And
are you doing that as a streaming file or as just an MOV that people can download?
Just as a download. I do in my membership site, what I'll do is I'll also load it up to Vimeo because I love Vimeo's player. I love the way it looks. It's got a nice look to it and it's a smooth playing a streaming feature. So that's one of the reasons I like it. I know you like to use Wistia. I like using Vimeo for its ability to stream smoothly. And so I'll do that for my members. I'll put it on if they want to watch online, I put it into Vimeo also. So the download file they get it from S3 for watching it online, it's on Vimeo.
Great. That's where I was hoping to get to. And I just want to make sure that people understand how easy this is. I don't recommend people bother to encode and upload streaming versions to S3 and make their own players. Now I suggest they load it to Vimeo or Wistia for private memberships. Publicly displayed ones, put it to YouTube and get the benefit of that public, exposure.
And the search, yeah.
And the main point is that by loading it to any of those three programs, they will multi-encode it to play on just about any device. You don't have to be technical, and it's going to be easy for you to use. So that's it. I'm just going to develop this one more section, because what I do with my webinar replays is I will have it in ScreenFlow as an MOV. I will definitely cut the front and the back. I won't separate the audio and clean it up. I don't even know how to do that. But what I will do is I'll take a 60-minute webinar and I'll actually chop it into seven or eight minute modules, and I'll now make an entire course from it. So if I go back 30 days ago, I ran a webinar called Own the Race Course. And when it was finished, I chopped it into about seven modules. So I had the intro module, which was about 12 minutes, and I give that away for free on its own website, and then I sell the rest of the course from that. And it's in little bite-sized pieces by topic, so that I found that people have a pretty short attention span, and it makes the product appear more substantial when you can turn a whole six or seven module product from one recording. And then I load those modules into my paid membership area as separate topics. And then underneath those modules, people can ask questions and I can answer them on the most relevant topic that they're looking at. And it gives people that focus. And I did this because I want people to actually consume and engage and learn from that information, because I know that that helps them justify the next purchase. So that's like the full-blown turning that content into its own complete product with its own name, its own graphics, its own affiliate program and banners, its own website. And it now sells every single day all by itself with affiliate traffic. And what I'm doing is doing one of those each month. I do one for my paid members in FastWeb Formula. And at the end of the webinar, I turn it into its own product. So in the last 6 months, I've added six brand new information products like Content Assault and Own the Race Course and Superfast Conversions, Think Way Bigger. And I just ran one called Lunatic Millionaire. And that was a funny one, Tim, because my internet connection was so poor that I think I lost everyone on the webinar. And because I've run so many, I didn't skip a beat. I simply just ran it to the end, hit stop on ScreenFlow, and I've still got the full recording, and I can cut it into modules and send everybody who registered for the webinar the product, and they'll get a better version. It's now changed from a webinar style to just a presenter style, because I trim out the Q&As and everything, and I just have me answering the question, and that way I can preframe the question with, okay, you might be wondering what sort of plugin I'm using here. So someone types in, what plugin are you using, James? So I'll actually restate the question and then answer it. And that becomes a one-sided content piece.
Nice, nice. I'm like taking notes over here, because I'm going to start doing that, because I do this on a regular basis. Like you were saying about having the breaking it up into small pieces. I only started doing that like a year ago. I was making the mistake of leaving these 1 hour to an hour and a half long videos, and people just weren't going to finish them. And so I've started breaking them up. And then I realized when I was breaking them up that's when I realized I needed segments, because it's a lot easier to cut apart a training if you have the different segments that you're going to go from one to the next.
And, exactly.
Yeah.
So people can learn from all of our mistakes and our experience. So in fact, it was only Lunatic Millionaire. I literally put part one, part two, part three, and I went all the way through to part 12. And when I get to that slide, that's when I stop the edit, and that's the module, and I go to the next one. It doesn't matter if it's 1 or 2 minutes, by the way. I looked in my Wistia heat maps, and I noticed that a 60-minute webinar, the audience really fades away by the end, even if they're dedicated and whatever. Facebook opens up, or the phone rings, or they've got to go out, you know, drop the kids off to school or whatever. But anyone can sit through a 2 to 5 minute module, and the heat maps show that you get 85% engagement instead of 25% through those little modules. And it's easier to eat an elephant in small pieces than to try and in one bite, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to throw in one more technical tip, because you said like nearly everyone dropped off. Your connection was so bad. There's the technique, and when you're recording, that your side, if you're recording from your side with your computer, then your sound is always going to be crisp. So even if it's crackling, your connections, your internet connection's crackling, if you have another speaker and they're not coming through clearly, your side is always going to be crisp. So if you're just doing a interview style, like we're doing right now, you're recording on your side and I'm recording on my side. So if we have a dropout with Skype, what's going to happen is when we put the two together, it's going to sound perfect, as if we were in the same room together.
Exactly. And I now know that you're going to tune up your S's before you send your side across. So yeah. Listeners probably have the new improved enhanced version of Tim.
Yeah. That way I sound better in their ears.
Okay. So we've now turned our initial webinar into either paid up front, or we've sold something on the webinar for affiliate commission or one of our other products or the experts product. And we've cut it up, edited it, put it online. And do you do other things? Do you ever transcribe it or turn it into MP3s to, like I do? Or do you just run with the video version?
Always. I'm a big believer in repurposing. And that's like a whole nother topic of doing content for cash. So as I was mentioning earlier, repurposing is huge. So if you have a video, then and there's a lot of audio, there's no sense in doing just video. I love audio. I put all my MP3s, my podcasts and stuff on my phone. I go out walking my dog for a couple of hours. I get to listen. There's no way I can go out and use that same time trying to watch a video. So I know that there's a lot of people out there who have a different learning modality and they're going to want audio. And then there's the other kind that are going to want to read instead of watching a video. So I do. It's easy when you're splitting out the audio like I'm doing and make sure that my audio sounds nice. I've already pulled the audio out. I can just, while I'm doing that, I can convert it into MP3. Before I put the high quality file back into the video. So I get the audio and the video, immediately. Then I turn if I use just a transcript, which I'm not a really big fan of transcripts. I don't really like reading them, so I don't like to make them, but you can have a transcript done very quickly, and then you need to edit it up so it's readable, because the way we talk isn't a way people like to read. So you need to clean it up and turn that into a workbook. And sometimes what I'll do with the workbook is, instead of actually doing verbatim what was in the webinar, what I like to do is actually take the main topics out of it and have different paragraphs about it with action items for that segment, so that it's like, okay, so you just learned this. Now you can take action on it. And here's how you would take action on it. So it becomes more of a workbook instead of just a transcription.
Great tip. And what we do is my team will do a full word-for-word transcription, but I give them permission to make me sound better than I did in the audio. So they will clean up. If I do an arm and an R or I say something that's verbose, they'll just shrink it and make me sound better. So a big thank you to the team. But what they do is they take screenshots from my slides and they put the pictures. So it turns into like a picture word book. And what I make sure I do when I'm developing the slides is I put the action item at the end of each module. So I'll just before I wrap the module, I say, so the action item up here is to review your website and define one conversion element you would like to test. So it turns the transcription into an automatic action checkbook list.
Nice. I'm going to start doing that.
If you look at Own the Race course, you'll see that it's virtually an entire checklist program, that the whole training was my checklist from start to finish, explained with context. And the slides end up being a checklist. And I think on the Lifestyle Business podcast, Dan actually published a picture of my whiteboard draft for that product, which was the checklist steps. And that most of my products actually start from a checklist, from my bullet points in Evernote. They get expanded into a demonstration or a case study or an explanation, and then they get reduced back to a checklist for implementation. So that's my preparation thing. Do you have a different way of preparing?
I take the kind of professorial approach where I have like a topic that I want to cover, and I try to give them first an introduction, then depth, and then summary. So that's been my approach, where because I haven't done like the checklist style and having the action items built into the presentation. That's definitely something that I want that I'm going to implement now, because I think that's just a better learning process. But I have been taking essentially the lecture style and then turning that lecture into something actionable at the end. But I think the way you're doing it is so much better, to be able to have the action items along the way, especially when you know you're going to be cutting it up afterwards.
Well, in my case, it came from observing how people use the material and also the way that I like to learn. One of my mentors taught me that a book is essentially just a bunch of, like, it's 10 or 20 bullet points turned into an entire book. And our goal is to really strain it back down to the 10 or 20 bullet points. And interestingly, that's how the products are created. And the other thing that I learned that was really interesting is, rather than overwhelm or complicate things to make people feel like they got value, the best value would truly be if you could deliver the minimum product possible that gets the maximum result. And I've heard it explained the best by Dean Jackson. He used that example of, if you had a membership where people pay $1,000 a month, and on the second day of the membership, you sent them a check for $1,200 a month and they didn't have to do anything, then that would be a terrific membership. Even though there's no product to consume, no words, no videos, it's a $200 a month profit.
Right.
So that, the question is, how can we take our training and our webinars and reduce it down to the essential items that will help someone solve their problem, which is what you said right in the beginning. We're solving problems. And we've talked about some of the technical ways that we can do that now. I'm pretty sure after listening to this, somebody could understand why they should be turning their content into cash. The cash part's the big hint there, what they're supposed to do, and that is to organize an expert, facilitate a webinar, get people to turn up, take some money for it, or make a recommendation that turns into a reward, bundle and produce that into a package that we can then sell later. We've even talked about how they might upload the video for that and store the audio for that. And we've given some technical tips there, and we've covered a couple of the psychological angles, so things that might stop somebody in their tracks. And hopefully with a bit of practice and accepting that it will be more difficult in the beginning than it will be after their first 6 or 7 or 10 turns at it, I think somebody's probably ready to take action on this now. Have you got some final thoughts, Tim?
Just take action. I mean, it's going to be scary at first, but as soon as you start taking action, the fear goes away. And once you get through your first webinar, then you're going to feel like an old pro, and you're going to do it over and over again. And as you can see, it's something that is a fast way of making content that people will find valuable. And that's the big difference between just sitting around blogging all day and actually creating content that people will pay for. It's in the presentation. It's in the way you solve a problem. So just go out and do it. That's the only advice I can give.
Cool. Well, I'm going to just ask you one more question, and that is, how do you know what problems people need solving?
Okay, yeah. It's like, oh, we're starting a whole nother episode here. Okay.
I imagine someone's listening thinking, that's great, guys, but, you know, what topic, what experts, where do I find this information out? And if it is another episode, then I'm going to invite you back and say, do you want to cover a research or, tips for solving problems episode?
Okay, so I'll try to do this pretty quick. First, we're going to assume two different things. One is that you're already in a market and you're already doing something. So you've got an audience, maybe you've got a list already. And the other is you are just getting started. You have nothing. So if you already have something, then ask. Just ask your audience. They will tell you. They're going to tell you what they want from you specifically. So that's the great thing about having already built an audience, having a list of your own, is that you can just reach out to them and find out what the problems are. Ask them, like, what are your biggest hangups? What's preventing you from accomplishing whatever it is? If you are in the cake decorating world, if you're doing that, it's like, what's preventing them from doing the kind of things that they want to do? You ask them and they're going to let you know, this is what I am having problems with. And then you don't leave it there, because if the first question you ask, the answer you get is going to probably be a surface problem. So you need to ask a little deeper, a follow-up question. So you can do that in a survey. And Google Docs, you can create an awesome survey out of Google Docs now. It's pretty simple to do. You can just go in there, make a survey. You can use SurveyMonkey, which I tend to use. So you can create a survey, or you can just send out an email and say, hit reply to this. And that I get a bigger response from my members and from my audience, is just hit reply to this message, and they just tell me. So that's the fastest way to find problems in your market. If you're just getting started, then what you need to do is go out and hit some research. Old school techniques: go to forums in your marketplace and see what things people are asking. If you're in a market that is big enough, you're going to find books at Barnes & Noble or on Amazon. Amazon's a great search engine for ideas. You just go on there, you type in your marketplace, and you can see what people are writing about, that they're selling information already on stuff that you're doing. So you can go out and find through other people's research. It's a shortcut. So it's like, oh, here's the highest selling items in my marketplace on Amazon are these topics. I'll just hit their table of contents, and now I've got a whole bunch of subjects I can cover that I know people are willing to pay money for.
Wow, that's awesome. Tim, that is sensational. I think we're going to stop it there, because we've given an entire income stream, product idea, and implementation checklist. I'm going to pop this up on Internet Marketing Speed with a full transcription. Be sure to head over to Tim Connolly's website, which is called foolishadventure.com. Hop on the email list and find out when there's a new podcast, because they're fantastic. I've been listening to the whole back catalog, which has been a lot of fun. And I want to thank you again for coming on the show, Tim.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to be on here and be able to talk about this stuff. You and I tend to have the ability to talk about business stuff at length.
Yeah, well, I'm going to keep an eye on the questions. So if people have questions, they can pop them down there and I'll be along to answer them. And I'd love to have you back, and we'll cover another one of your favorite topics, which is the TIM formula, I think you call it.
Yeah, the TIM, yeah, which is not me. Time, income, and mobility.
I'm looking forward to that. We'll catch you soon, Tim.
All right, thanks a lot, James.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.